Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining us from the city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, man. A lot of fights this weekend and some good knockouts, man. At least one candidate for knockout of the year. Just a fun weekend of fights. Can't wait to talk about it.
If you want to call in, we will take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. That number, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. Call in, and we'll take your questions or comments. Or you could do so via Twitter, at SteveMaxBoxing, at Gabriel_Montoya, and at MaxBoxingLive. But let's get started with round number one this past weekend from our nation's capital at the D.C. Armory. It was showtime. And your main event for the WBA IBF light heavyweight title, it was the Alien coming up with his 55th professional victory, easily dispatching Bibet Shumanov in what was a split decision, but more on that later. Your score, 116-111 twice. And inconceivably, Gustavo Padilla had Shumanov winning 114-113. For the WBO middleweight title, Peter Quillen improves to 31-0 with a 12-round decision over Lucas Konechny. And then for the IBF welterweight title, Sean Showtime Porter is seemingly coming into his own, stopping Pauly Malignaggi and perhaps ending the career of the Magic Man. Sean Porter is now 24-0-1, scoring his 15th knockout. Gabe, was the main event more about Hopkins or the ineptitude of Bibet Shumanov, or a lot of both?
It's a lot of both. I mean, I think it's, you know, guys can only beat who's available to him, and Bernard Hopkins has been around for so long. Sometimes there's good things available to him, sometimes there aren't. We're just seeing also this kind of league working in tandem, moving towards getting, you know, hopefully, probably the flagship next star in Adonis Stevenson, all the belts. If we can get them from Bernard Hopkins, then they've got somebody that they can throw for several more years. I mean, he's not exactly a young guy, but he's around, I believe, the same age, at 37, that Hopkins was when he took out Trinidad and kind of began the beginnings of his superstar portion of his career. You know, the fight was brutal. You know, Hopkins spends a lot of time trying not to be in a fight, moving away, just smothering punches or just avoiding violence altogether. And it's masterful when he starts to mix in, you know, punches here and there and straight leads and you know, single shots. But that's the problem. It's just one shot and done and smothered. Yeah, it's beautiful, and it's I guess, on some level, and it's mastery. But, boy, it's not entertaining at all.
I thought Bibet Shumanov should have fired his trainer and get a new one. And by the way, that guy's name is Bibet Shumanov. I just really believe that if you're going to go in there with the Bobby Fischer of boxing, which Hopkins is, you better have a stated game plan and a certain philosophy. And I really thought the first 15 seconds of this fight really told you where this was going, where he almost seemed mesmerized by whatever Bernard Hopkins is doing, whether that's Jedi mind tricks or great boxing. But as soon as he stood there kind of blank-faced and frozen, you said to yourself, this is not looking good. And Bernard Hopkins controlled the action, and I thought he was what he was nowadays. Because I think there are two stages of Bernard Hopkins. There's the executioner stage that people forget. He used to be a devastating puncher at 160. The Joe Lipsy highlight reel knockout, what he did to Steve Frank in record-breaking fashion in about 15 seconds, that guy no longer exists. And perhaps that's to be expected at age 49 going on 50. But before we make too much out of this performance, last I checked, this was not Eddie Mustafa Muhammad. This was not Dwight Muhammad Cowie or Michael Spinks. This is Bibet Shumanov, who before he was riddled this weekend, Gabe, was he not completely riddled by a guy by the name of Gabriel Campillo?
he was riddled by criticism too. I mean, yeah, nobody really thought much of him. I mean, so it's, you know, if it was the old times and this is just like, you know, the road game where you made some money off being Bernard Hopkins, you know, legendary fighter, you know, Babe Ruth would just be just another guy, you know. Maybe this would even be like a like an eight-rounder, so you wouldn't have to go too many rounds with just a guy, and you could preserve it and fight maybe in another 2 weeks. So, I mean, it just is what it is. It's a trip that the guy has a belt. I've never seen, you know, it's pretty rare to see a guy that seems to be something of an outsider come into the sport, maneuver his way to a belt, get a hold of it, go through a couple different promoters, and then find his way to get, you know, this fight, like fighting in there with Bernard Hopkins. I almost felt like Babe Ruth and, like, I think his brother's, like, his business partner, they kind of gamed the system a little bit and made a brand out of this guy just enough, you know, to get a belt and then get to this fight. It's kind of, you know, you have to applaud it. Sometimes people, you know, they look at Al Haymon as manager of the year, but sometimes those guys just make little moves just for themselves. This is the case here.
Bibet Shumanov, I'll say it right now, is one of the all-time worst belt holders I have ever seen. I really think he is that hapless. I think he's inept. And I think in other eras, he would not be an eight-round fighter. Gabe, Gustavo Padilla had Shumanov winning 114-113. For the record, I thought the other judges, by giving 3-4 rounds to Shumanov, were very, very generous. But Gustavo Padilla, I think when you see a card like this, and thankfully the other judges weren't on his side of the ledger, because I think this would have been one of the all-time worst robberies. No matter what you think of Hopkins' style, I thought he clearly won this fight easy, going away, no question about it, and he put the cherry on top with the knockdown in the 11th. A guy like Gustavo Padilla should never be allowed, not even judging a championship fight, but even preliminary bouts, because you know why? Those guys are fighting 4, 6, 8 rounders. They give a damn. They put their heart and soul into this. Gabe, I have no trust in this guy.
None whatsoever. Yeah, you, like, what fight were you watching? I mean, I guess you could be annoyed that Hopkins isn't throwing a lot of punches, but when he was, he was landing. And he was landing in succession at times. He did start to throw combinations. There was no question who was the boss in there, whose fight they were fighting. On no planet did Babe Ruth Shumanov win many rounds, much less the fight. I mean, and you know, that's the sport, though. I mean, they really need to sanction a guy like that. He should be – you shouldn't ever hear his name on TV. You know, break him back in with some undercard fights. But he should be brought in to the commission, before the commission. He should review the fight. I feel bad that they all have to watch it again because it's really unentertaining. but they should review it. And he needs to explain, like, what did you see that you know, the rest of us didn't?
Gabe, you have labeled Peter Quillen the Shield, and that's not because he looks like the NFL logo, but fighting Lucas Konechny, who had about 23 knockouts in over 55 fights, and that's as a career junior middleweight in Europe, he won. And I said on Saturday night on Twitter he was dominant yet unimpressive. I've always thought it was funny that Quillen fans knocked the competition of Gennady Golovkin. But if you look at what they've done, can anyone in good faith actually tell me that Peter Quillen is actually among the elite middleweights in the world with or without a belt?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like a champion the way Canelo has been a champion. And Canelo is starting to step it up, but these guys get belts so early so you can brand them a champion, and then they just fight like no one of consequence. And it's like they're still in their apprenticeship. You haven't really seen him face a puncher that's going to – I mean, I guess Endam was a stiffer test, but that was also a guy that, you know, they were selling Quillen as this – get all these knockdowns in two fights, but, like, well, what about finishing the fight? Like, you know, Endam, you couldn't even get him out of there. This guy was pounding and pounding on Konechny, who I couldn't tell you what Konechny was trying to get done in the fight. If he had a purpose for being in the fight, I don't know what it was, because it didn't seem like it was to win it.
Gabe, what Konechny was trying to do was he had the earmuffs on, to use a Teddy Atlasism, and he was trying to punch in between, and he actually did get through with a couple of uppercuts. But again, he wasn't a puncher at 54, and Peter Quillen's a very big middleweight. Peter Quillen has skills, but he's also very vulnerable. And the one thing I've always said about Peter Quillen, you don't have to be Emmanuel Stewart or Angelo Dundee to figure out. He doesn't tuck in his chin very well, and he gets very squared up. and his hands come back a little bit low, and you can punch with him, time him, and counterpunch him because he's not a guy that hides the chin and makes himself invisible. Bernard Hopkins and Peter Quillen are on two separate ends of the spectrum as it relates to that particular defensive technique of making yourself small and also very elusive and getting sideways. Quillen has a habit of getting very squared up with his two shoulders. I think what Peter Quillen is the babysitter, and I don't mean Elizabeth Shue, because he's basically the lone belt holder in this division where a guy from Golden Boy, Al Haymon slash Showtime, whether that be Floyd Mayweather, if he ever wants to move up to 160 and quote-unquote make history, or be a mark for Canelo Alvarez, who I think is going to have his last fight as a junior middleweight and going to eventually move up as a full-fledged middleweight soon. Peter Quillen, it was mentioned by somebody, I think, at Fight Source, who made a great point. There's a guy, he's not a Cold War casualty. He's benefiting from this situation between Golden Boy, Top Rank, HBO, and Showtime, because he's making a very good living while basically playing ball in Double A.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he's kind of the 160 Birdo, in a sense. You know, he's kind of waiting around. He's a valuable, you know, puzzle piece, and so that he's kind of protected within his own league. I mean, this is the stuff that you go, you know, on one level, the belts do matter, and they do help fighters get into position, and they help like, the smaller guys make better money. You know, that's a proven fact, and it's something that it's a hard truth to get used to, but it's just the way it is right now. And it also, in a way, gives fighters a bit of power. But here, yeah, you kind of wonder, because you look at the division. Felix Stern has the IBF belt. Golovkin has WBA. WBC is kind of actually split. Marco Antonio Rubio and Sergio Martinez apparently have it. Why, I have no idea. And so this is Al Haymon and Golden Boy's one toe hold is Quillen. But I just don't understand what the standard is here. How did Konechny get ranked? I mean, he's a career junior middleweight. Why is this fight? Why did that fight happen? I have no idea. But looking forward and looking at all those flaws of Quillen that you were talking about, I kind of wonder about Daniel Jacobs, who's being brought back and being proposed as probably the next guy. Do you think that's the guy? Do you think he's learned? We've seen his fights in between. Or is it more of the same with him, where they just kind of fed him nothing and then they're going to throw him back into the title so that somebody else can look good?
You know, it's a good question. You know why Danny Jacobs qualifies, though, right? He's with Al Haymon. And Al Haymon
right.
will make competitive fights if he has both the A and B side of the ledger. Danny Jacobs, one thing he can do, I still don't know about his chin or his durability, as we saw against Dmitry Pirog years ago, he can crack, though, with both hands. And I just kept looking at this fight, which was a monotonous 36 minutes, and I kept saying to myself, you know, if Curtis Stevens gets leather on Kid Chocolate, he melts him. Turiano Johnson, with his physicality and his toughness, might wear him down. Danny Jacobs may or may not be ready, but in this sense, this time around, he may not be fighting a guy as solid as Dmitry Pirog as he did in 2010. Gabe, last week we rolled with Sean Porter, and I think we both thought it'd be a tough grinding affair where the strength and physicality of the young bull from Ohio would win late. You know what? He came through this was like a battering ram of the LAPD going through a screen door. He absolutely manhandled Pauly Malignaggi.
You know, it was watching him. You know, Sean Porter used to be a halfback, and he's built like one. You know, real low to the ground, low center of gravity, very explosive, and just a thick man that you wouldn't want him slamming into you if you were a defensive player. And that's how he fights. He gets low, he sees the opening, and he explodes right through it. And I really like that left hook of his. He's using it as a lead punch. I think he needs more of a jab, but he actually out-jabbed Pauly pretty early on. And that I believe that cut came from
yes.
one of those jackhammer jabs of Porter. The guy's really just coming into his own. I like that, you know, he did two mini camps up here, like a week each, and then he's gone to other places to train. He keeps mixing it up. And him and his dad, Ken, they're just traveling warriors, man, and they've built a world champion in Sean, and they continue to. I was very surprised by how explosive he was. But the kind of training he's doing, I mean, on some level, I wasn't. You know, that's what he's been looking for, and it's something I didn't know if he could develop, was that kind of one-stop shot power that he was displaying. I mean, it wasn't one punch, but he was concussive, and then he finished. It was just thoroughly impressive.
The first leaping left hook where he came out of his Nikes, Paulie Malignaggi's head jerked back and his eyes rolled back, and I said, uh-oh. He's hurting him early and often, and Paulie looked like a guy who I think has lost a couple of inches off his fastball, and it turned out to be a foot. He saw stuff and could do nothing about it, and when he started getting out-jabbed early in the second round, I said, this fight's going to be very tough for him because the physicality and the strength took over of Sean Porter. And we've got to mention this about Sean Porter, who really has come a long way from that guy who was very fortunate to get a draw at the L.A. Sports Arena against Julio Diaz when we were out there. He looked like a suspect, but it's a testament to the work they put in and the fact that young fighters can grow and develop right in front of our eyes. And, Gabe, you can speak upon this because you've been out there when he's been working with the Victor Conte camp and Remy Kerchemny. And his dad spoke about it to me last night. I don't think people understand or have a comprehension of this, and I certainly overlooked it for years. He fought as an amateur at 165, so it took some time for his body to actually shrink back down and adapt to actually being a true welterweight.
Yeah, I think it's taken some time to adjust to making the weight and being consistent with his conditioning. But he's a big guy. You know, you look at him, he's probably watched at 165, probably closer to that, I think. Mid-160s, I would say. But he doesn't blow up. He's not like a guy that gets fat between fights. They keep training, and they try to keep it down. And so I think part of that is why they travel so much and hit different gyms and work with the top people. I mean, they're very, very hungry. And this fight, you know, here's the thing, though. You know, Konechny and Paulie, to me, are two guys that were looking out the door towards retirement. Paulie's been beaten before. This isn't something, you know, new for him to get kind of blitzed by a younger, stronger guy, and he just can't do anything about it. He was having a bit of a resurgence, but I think it, again, shows the lack of quality of Adrian Broner more than anything. That close fight makes Broner look worse and worse, I think. I mean, this is explosive. It's what Porter should do, but it's a weird thing over at Showtime. You've got these champions defending against guys that are kind of semi-retired, or in Paulie's case, kind of a one-stop shop in-house guy. He's a part commentator, part fighter, and a good mouthpiece if you need him for quotes. So it's an interesting situation.
Sean Porter, in back-to-back fights, has defeated Devin Alexander and Paulie Malignaggi pretty thoroughly. I'm not saying that's murderer's row, but that's a pretty good run, and he's got Kell Brook as an IBF mandatory. This is a kid building a career just by keeping his nose on the grindstone and boxing. My salute to both Sean and Kenny Porter. And, Gabe, we got to clear this up on Paulie Malignaggi. I wrote this today. You talked about it last week. Turns out we made an error. We want to clarify something. Paulie Malignaggi, and I want to get into this, he has done, quote-unquote, extra testing. Right, Gabe?
He has. I mean, he did it with in the Broner fight. He asked for VADA testing. He instead got, and kind of late in the game, USADA testing. And then after he got it, they weren't doing any testing, and he complained about it. The next day they showed up. And I believe all told he had like two tests within the camp, but like three tests within like 9 days. And it was very truncated, and even he was not happy about it. He was complaining about it. And to me, it's why I kind of mentally omitted it. It's my error. But I'm not really making a correction so much as a clarification because, you know, this may seem like I'm moving the goalpost, but it actually isn't because the goalpost had been moved by the company, you know, people deride, but really when they set the bar is VADA. They're the voluntary anti-doping agency. And if Paulie wanted them, he could volunteer to do it. That's what they're set up for. He could pay for it. That's what Tim Bradley did. Bradley has asked for it twice and had the same thing happen to him. But the promoter comes in and says, no, we want you to use our company, even if it doesn't exist. And in those cases, it was like the NSAC hadn't done it yet. They created this system, and Bradley said, cool, I know that VADA's standard is this. I don't know what your standard is. I'm doing VADA anyways. He did both. As a political statement, it really is. And Paulie, instead, and there was an interview in Boxing Thing where he just said, well, it's a choice between doing, you know, the testing that you want to do, or losing out on a six-figure, you know, six-figure payday. Well, now you have a six-figure payday. Why not make that statement and say, I still know the bar is this high? All Paulie's saying with that is that my standards are for sale, and if they tell me to do this, then I'm going to do that. It goes in line with his history of complaining about Heyman and then signing with him. So to me, it's just doing what the promoter wanted you to do, not this high standard that we know about. And so that's something other than. You can't ignore that standard. So it's a clarification. It's not really a correction. As far as I'm concerned, he hasn't stood up for anything, Paulie, because he hasn't stood by Vada. He's basically said, he didn't ask the question, why are they truncating this? Why are they trying to cut them off? Like, why is Bob and Richard not allowing people to use that company? So they'll die off, and they can keep control of the result. That's my guess at it. And by doing that and folding the way Paulie did, in my opinion, it's just he gave in. So he doesn't get to complain afterwards.
Okay, what I found most distasteful was his selective prosecution, where I thought he was downright slanderous of Manny Pacquiao, and when he was there at the wild card, and I've talked to him many times, for two and a half years, he never said a word, but as soon as he's 3,000 miles away, he starts ratcheting up the rhetoric again. And my point is, why all of a sudden this courage? You had a chance to say this plenty of times in 2.5 years, and now the fact he's so closely aligned to both Heyman and Showtime, who in many ways are the rival of Pacquiao, he came off as a corporate mouthpiece. That's the biggest issue I have, and he wants to keep telling the media to do their job. Paulie, you're now part of the media, and you have a bigger pulpit than any of us. So my question is, if he has a mental doubt about a certain fighter that he just thinks and knows in his own heart is on steroids or PEDs or whatever it is, would he dare say it if that fighter was a Showtime Al Heyman Golden Boy promoted boxer? I just have a hard time believing that. You know what? We're going to preview the Home Depot Center card at Showtime, which airs this weekend. A little bit later, let's get to your calls. I know we have full phone lines. Once again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's go to the phone lines.
In the 559, you're live on the next round. 559.
Hey, guys. Happy Monday.
Hey, how
good. Who is this?
Happy Monday.
This is Steve from Fresno.
Steve from the Bulldog City. Welcome to the next round.
Hey, guys. I got a question. To comment on Peter Quill, this is ready for the taking. Why feed to Daniel Jacobs, new big box office Canelo, which would make Canelo a two-way champion and set up even bigger box office for the Cotto if Cotto gets past Martinez, which he will.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt, Steve, that what he is, and I'll reference it again, he is the babysitter. He is keeping that one belt that Golden Boy slash Heyman slash Showtime has at 160 warm for a bigger name and a better fighter. And in many respects, because of the constructs of this business, Gabe, this is exactly why you nicknamed him and that title the Shield.
Yeah, it's... I think I feel bad for him. I mean, everybody probably wants to test their greatness. At the same time, it is kind of disingenuous to call out all these other guys when you know you're really not going to get matched against them. I mean, on some level, you know, Golovkin, that fight actually could be the bridge where if HBO really wanted that fight, I think it's actually a fun fight, Golovkin-Quillen. Quillen might be able to come across. And do it because he kind of. I mean, what does he really bring to the table? But besides that belt, I don't think he's much of a draw. His style isn't very exciting. I kind of wonder if that fight couldn't be made. But again, Heyman doesn't take risks that he doesn't have both sides of. So maybe that's why it didn't. I don't know. I just talked myself out of that fight. I think he'll just continue on. I don't think he's going to fight anybody of note. I've never felt like it's going to happen. And I mean, look at the division and who they're going to go next. Patrick Nielsen or Daniel Jacobs, perhaps, or I guess Billy Saunders is the number one. I don't think he should be afraid of any of those people, besides maybe Jacobs.
Yeah. Well, one more question, guys. After watching Friday Night Fights this week, is it too soon to start using bad puns about Nate Heaven, like a heaven-sent heavyweight, a right hand from the heavens? When can you start seeing these highlights, these headlines?
Well, you're referring to Heaven that's knocked that guy cold. He certainly seems to have a little bit of promise. But again, he wasn't exactly facing Jack Dempsey, but it's always exciting to see guys who are up and coming make a splash and have some highlight reel knockouts. But you know what's scary news, guys? I read the headline. Does Vladimir Klitschko really want to fight another 10 years? Oh, suffering succotash.
That's brutal. Well, I mean, somebody's going to be forced to face somebody that's dangerous. And I think maybe that person will come along. I mean, I think he can be pressed, and I think he can be tired. He's fighting more sporadically. But going back to heaven, that guy, he needs some work on his footwork, man. He's very sloppy. Get the chin down. He's got a lot of mechanical issues. He was looking at the right hand, but his hands would just leave his chin. You know, he's just not defensively responsible. That's the beauty of the heavyweights. It's like one right hand, one highlight reel knockout, and it just gives everybody a little bit of hope that the big guys could rise again.
Steve, thank you, and welcome to the show. Please call back again.
You got it, guys. Take care.
All right, if you want to call in, that opens up one line, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on the queue?
In the 703, you're live on the next round.
Hi, happy Monday to you guys.
Good, who is this?
Happy Monday.
This is Luis from Baltimore.
Luis from The Wire. Welcome aboard.
Yes.
The next round.
Hey, listen, great subject that you guys touch. And Steve, I think you wrote about the fight game, didn't you, on your article?
Yes, I did. I've been a guest. For full disclosure, I'm very friendly with Jim Lampley. But I think a flaw was seen in that show where they're trying to do a hard sell on Andre Ward. I don't know if you saw it, Gabe, but I thought that was an example of why a show like that is supposed to be a topical news show, simply cannot exist on one of the two major premium cable networks.
I think it could, but it needs reporters. It needs beat reporters, and that show doesn't have that. It has Jim Lampley, who has the voice of a broadcaster, a news anchor, and the earnestness, and I think his heart's in the right place with what he wants the show to be. But it's not like real sports. It's not like a 2020 kind of show. I don't learn anything new. It's very old style, but it plays like an old newspaper. But you're right, like the opinion piece. Why are we even talking about Andre Ward? He doesn't have any fights. He's basically a commentator on that network while he works out his promotional issues with Dan Gustin. That I don't pretend to know contract law or who's right or wrong in the case, but that's just the facts of the matter. He's probably not going to fight this year because he's having promotional issues.
But Gabe
why
is number two pound for pound. Come on, but Lewis.
Who cares? Exactly.
But Lewis,
exactly.
What was your opinion of the fight game as a subscriber of HBO?
Well, I mean, I definitely, in regards to my opinion, I mean, I definitely agree with all the points you stated in your article. I mean, I think personally it should be taken out of HBO and Showtime because they're catering their employers' needs and objectives. And honestly, I like the concept and all that, and I agree with Gabe in the sense that they need journalists. I mean, I think that would be great because I don't know how you – I would consider that as a conflict of interest, to be very honest with you. And I will link those comments with what Gabe wrote today in regards to PEDs and on a major scale, like, having national board, not national boards, but state commissions regulating the PEDs, you know, have a lot of independent folks come into the game because, wow, boxing is really all over the place. And I've been learning a lot from you guys. I mean, it's like a conflict of interest after conflict of interest. Like Sean Porter and Paulie Malignaggi didn't do the testing, right, for this fight.
No, they did not.
No, I mean,
and
they didn't do Vada. I don't believe they did USADA. You know, and even in the Malignaggi fight, you know, to further kind of that point, I believe in the interview he mentioned, like they did urine sometimes. You know, Vada does a certain standard. They do the same tests every time, and they basically test for everything, and they take blood and urine every time. That once you set a standard like that, everything else below it is what are you saying by going with a lower standard than that? It's that you don't really want to catch people, or you're afraid to. Golden Boy, rightly so, they lost a lot of money by doing this stance. They're not here to be agents of political change, but once you open that door, you have to explain your reasons for wanting to close it again. And that whole thing was.
I also, Dave, enjoy your article. I don't know, for whatever it's worth, I think John McCain a couple of years ago tried to push for a national boxing commission. And, that may be the beginning towards a unified national standard, just like for track and field and cycling, since they have a little bit more structured testing, because it's kind of like a joke. I mean, it seems like.
The problem with Kane's All-E Act is that it had no teeth. It didn't really have anybody willing to enforce the laws. And the sport is, because it's not a unified league, you can have things that are happening. It's strange that both sides, you got like Mikey Garcia trying to get out of the Top Rank contract. You got Robert Guerrero, rather, on the other side trying to get out of his Golden Boy contract. Andre Ward doing it with his Dan Goosen. But at the same time, this kind of weird, it looks like a monopoly forming over at Showtime with Golden Boy and Heyman, that whole axis. There are some strange things going on in a major, major sport, and no one's really stopping to outside, like, regulate it and say, hey, are any of these things okay? Strange.
I know you have other callers on the line, but you know what? I agree with you. Somebody needs to be asking the right questions, pushing the envelope on the issues, and I agree. Hopkins should be asked for what's going on. I mean, it's great and all that he's 49 years old and he's winning, but I don't know. I mean, somebody needs to ask that question. And I guess I don't know. I mean, I can definitely see that going down an interesting route, because he had issues with, I believe, Doc Collins is his name, the Showtime host that was interviewing Hopkins, asking to further define special. he kind of got pissed out and said, I don't have to further define special. Special is a special. So it'll be interesting, but I look forward to see you, Steve, or anybody, asking Hopkins those questions,
Louis, we got to get running here. Thanks for the call, okay?
I appreciate it.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, hitting Twitter real fast from Gaddy Fan. In case you weren't going to talk about it on the show, what are your guys' thoughts on Guillermo Jones, Dennis Levedev 2, Gabe?
I want to see it. I think it's a fight that I enjoyed the first time, so it makes sense that the controversy surrounding it with the testing. I don't know. I think it's worth it. I don't think it's a worthless fight. I enjoyed it, so why not again?
I'm going to drop a Mr. Miyagi here as it relates to Guillermo Jones. Look bad, fight good. Honestly, the guy's body is just a mess. You wouldn't pick him out of a police lineup as a world-class fighter, but this guy knows how to fight. And I always get the sense that I know that there was a drug issue the last time. I think Guillermo Jones is just a better, more relaxed operator. But again, it is on foreign turf. Here's one from Brandon Bernica. Any update on the Golden Boy rift between Schaefer and Oscar? Are they going to part after May 3rd, as has been rumored? Gabe, honestly, it's just a wait and see. I'm not going to speculate. I'm just going to grab my popcorn and see what happens.
Yeah, no, the Samantha pick. I got Jones. I think I like smooth operators is a great way to describe him. It's a wait and see kind of thing. It's not like either one of them are calling me before they go to sleep to let me know the latest. We'll see. The lawyering up, we could see them just everybody chill out, and maybe Oscar realizes, look, what do I really have if I walk away? It is a very likely scenario. But okay, I am Oscar De La Hoya, but you could fail.
Dave, he ain't walking away. The question is, will this company move forward as currently constructed them? If you go by Oscar's Twitter feed recently, and I've heard from very good sources, he's in the office more and more last couple of weeks. And Oscar's been sending out some tweets making it very clear this is his company. I mean, after they won the purse bid for the Lomachenko-Russell fight, he says, congratulations to my employees. Well, I think that's more than just a subliminal message he is trying to send. Here's one from Robert Buffett, too. What's your opinion on the chances of Chavez-Golovkin still happening with all the top-ranked Heyman-Chavez rumors? Obviously, Al Heyman is signing everybody except the corpse of Jack Dempsey and Slappy Maxie Rosenbloom. But the consensus opinion that I get from people at top rank in HBO, Gabe, believe it or not, they are still very confident this fight happens July 19th.
Well, we'll see, you know. Or maybe, you know, Chavez announces it after the fight. It's one of those things. I mean, he signed BJ Flores. And it kind of makes you wonder, you know. I was watching the fights this weekend with Danny Jacobs, who's another Heyman fighter, doing commentating in favor or in place of Paulie Malignaggi, who's busy being a Heyman fighter fighting in the ring against another Heyman fighter. Are we going to get the right kind of coverage? You know, as we're talking about, like, the fight game, you have to talk about Showtime as well, and that, you know, these are fighters, so they're an expert in that, and they can give color commentating, but they're also just kind of doing positive coverage. They're not going to be talking about if a guy tested positive in his last fight or anything kind of pertinent that we might really need to know heading into these fights, or that they're not drug tested. It's a very slippery slope that boxing is going down in terms of its media coverage. And to the fight game, it's, yeah, when they get reporters, then they'll actually matter. I don't really care. I've never cared, really, what Max Kellerman has to say about boxing. I don't see him really at the gyms, you know, like a soldier kind of reporter such as yourself. I'm not even in that league anymore because I have very limited gym access up here in San Francisco. But so I think all those things kind of need to change. There needs to be some sort of balance. Maybe it comes from an independent source.
And in all fairness, I don't expect guys like Lampley and Max, who are colleagues of Andre Ward,
yeah,
whose network has a vested interest, to say, oh, yeah, he's boring and nobody wants to see him. Because quite frankly, that's not going to go over well with Ken Hirschman. That's the fact of life. And to that, all I can say is one thing. Where have you gone, Larry Merchant? Gabe, our guy Eduardo Taran is dying. He's about to implode. Please pick up 931. Let's go back on the phone lines.
All right, 931, you are live on the next round.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Keep
good.
Calm and sing Rocky Top.
Rocky Top.
And sing Rocky Top.
That's
yes, right.
Indeed. We're home with Peyton Manning.
Oh, he's always great. He's great. He's beautiful. He's beautiful. But,
and don't forget Reggie White, yes.
That's right. No, I'm calling because, I want to touch on two things that, because I know you guys are going to beat the dead horse today with Porter and Hopkins. First of all, I've been to numerous events, boxing events in my life, and I have never been in a more intimate or electric atmosphere than it was at the D.C. Armory. It was marvelous. It was marvelous. Even the boring B-Hop fight, people were stomping, screaming, chanting B-Hop. It was out of control. It was electric, and I want to tell everybody, if you're in the East Coast and you can't make it out West, come to the D.C. Armory. It is the best. There is no bad seat in that house. It's like watching a volunteer game here in Tennessee. There is no bad seat. It's
Eduardo, I've got to ask you this, though, because I remember when they did the Amir Khan-Peterson fight where they had nearly 8, 9, 10,000, somewhere in that vicinity. I got a lot of complaints that the structure of the floor seating, and they weren't rising level seats, that the sight lines weren't very good. Did you experience any of that this weekend?
Yes. However, you know, boxing is they hoard their fans. And if you want to pay thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for ringside, go to the MGM, go somewhere else. This is a perfect place for the average boxing fan who might not have the capital or the fiscal capability to just throw money at people who don't care. This is where you want to go. It is affordable, and it is fantastic. I cannot state it enough. It was fantastic.
Great to hear. Eduardo, what else is on your mind?
Yes, I'm hearing a lot of things about, you know, everybody, throw Porter in, with this guy and throw Porter and this guy and that. You know what? Boxing is our boxing stars are aging. Mayweather, Pacquiao, Cotto, Maravilla. Many of our quote-unquote elite guys have one foot out the door. I think it's imperative that we take care of our young lions. I think that we should promote and let our young lions develop and let our young guys take care of the aging lions. Therefore, at the end, have the young lions fight who's going to be the head of the pack in their respective division.
And, well, I agree with you. And, Gabe, me and you know Kenny Porter very well, and I don't know if he's Mr. Smith goes to Washington, but I think it's finally refreshing to see a manager or trainer flat out say, we don't want to play on one side of the street. We want to fight everybody there is. If we win or lose, we'll live with it. But what we can't live with is only being stuck with one set of opponents.
Yeah, it's brutal. And you don't get – I think it actually ultimately hurts the fighters. They don't develop quite the way they could have. And it hurts the sport. It hurts the history of the sport where we had this era where there was these two companies that were just trying to kill each other. And in the process, they stopped thinking about growing the sport by having these guys develop and build towards each other. There's rivalries that are never happening. And that's a big part of the sport, is having two big fan bases kind of jaw at each other and go to these fights and be some co-features, and you build something. Well, we can't do that because one company's built, you know, both companies really are too busy being a league.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And furthermore, Gabe, we're ready for the Frankie Randall 2 interview, and the next thing that I'm probably going to get booted out with this one, I think it's – I know Kid Chocolate is no world beater. He's not an elite fighter. However, every fight, like, for instance, in this fight, he showed a different facet. He showed lateral movement. I mean, I know, you know, and we got to give the other guy credit. He didn't go down. Kid Chocolate has power. However, the other guy didn't go down. He moved a little better. He's showing a little bit of improvements here and there. You know, I think we're being a little bit too harsh here on Kid Chocolate. He is what he is, you know. But personally, I would like for him to get his punches together, throw more than two at one time. But, you know, that's just me.
Eduardo, as always, thank you for the call.
Thanks, guys. You guys are awesome.
And we'll take one more call before we preview this week's triple header on Showtime from the Home Depot Center, actually the StubHub Center, to be contemporary. Here on the next round, this is Steve K9 Kim and Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Gabe, who's next on deck here? Gabe? Okay. Oh, Miami. Dade County.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, who is this?
Yes. Oh, this is Derek from the U.
Derek, what's going on? Let's go, Canes.
All right, so I want to talk about Danny Garcia saying that he's going up to welterweight, and I think that's a horrible idea, especially with guys like Sean Porter out there. I think Sean Porter would destroy Garcia at welterweight, and I think Danny needs to stay where he's at 140.
Derek, let me just stop you there. The problem is, though, and I don't disagree with you, is that I think he's having problems making weight. If you go all the way back to his days as an amateur fighting for USA Boxing, he was at 139. He's now, I believe, 25 or 26. It's probably overdue for him to move up north. I mean, Gabe, didn't he look like a very depleted fighter against Mauricio Herrera?
He looked listless, no energy, just flat from the first minute. That was my first thought. But at the same time, he looked cut, you know, and it was just kind of dry, not much sweat on him. And that's how you know a guy just didn't fully recover from the weight loss process, you know, as he was heading into the weigh-in. So I think it's right on time. I don't think he's jumping right to Sean Porter. I don't think that's a good idea. But this will be another interesting thing to see in that Danny is one of the few guys you could say that was developed in the Heyman Golden Boy kind of tandem into a champion, you know, kind of jumped, and he actually had a decent development as a contender, I would say. It was short, but it was good. And now he's moving up into a division, and we're going to see if they are able to navigate that. Will they give him the right fights to kind of get his feet under him at 47 and then go for a title? Or will they try to, like, you know, they really control that whole division. How are they going to maneuver Danny? It will be very interesting to see. But I'm excited for him, and I think actually as a matchup with Sean Porter, I think he would match up kind of good with him. And that they're both Swiss Army kind of fighters, not great at one thing other than being kind of versatile. I think it would be a fun fight.
Just one more thing, Steve. I know you talked about Felix Verdejo a lot. I know he fought this past Friday in Orlando and had like a first-round knockout. Just wanted to see what you guys thought about his career and him as a prospect.
Well, and listen, if you was a stock, I'm telling you, I'd buy it hand over fist. And I think he's going to be more Apple than Facebook, but I could be wrong. And he's going to fight June 7th on the Cotto Martinez undercard at Madison Square Garden. All I know is this. Every Puerto Rican that I converse with, either on social media or personally, they are very excited about him. There is this Tito Trinidad vibe as it relates to Verdejo, but we're still a long ways away. He still has not faced a quote-unquote real guy, and the one thing I want to see, the first time he gets dinged on the whiskers, I want to see how he reacts. Until that happens, Gabe, much of what is happening, although we're excited about it, let's be honest, it's a mirage.
It's kind of, yeah, absolutely. He looks like the guy. A lot like, you know, Errol Spence looks like the guy, but he was involved in another, you know, quick knockout win. And, you know, as soon as he drops the guy, they're like, that's his seventh, you know, first-round KO. And I always think about Bruce Trampler and his idea that you don't learn a lot from first-round knockouts. And I wonder, you know, what this brand that we're being sold and being sold to the fighters as we're seeing them developed on TV like this, is this good for them to not go rounds and just blitz people out of there? It's entertaining, but ultimately these guys are going to have a kind of truncated education. They're not going to know what to do in round 5, 6 when this guy doesn't go away. I mean, these fights, the last caller was right about Quillen. At least he's going rounds and he's solving problems as he's going along. He's not very spectacular, but at some point maybe he will turn a corner and it will get a little easier for him and he'll become a little more entertaining.
Derek, we appreciate the call. Join us again soon, okay?
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Let's get to round number two here from the StubHub Center in Carson, California, the Cathedral of Boxing in Southern California. The triple header, Keith Thurman as a welterweight belt holder takes on Julio Diaz, and a junior welterweight return of the machine, Lucas Matisse, takes on the hard-punching Johnny Molina. And lightweight action, Omar Figueroa takes on Jerry Belmontes. Gabe, this is what they would call in The Price is Right, the showcase showdown. Every single fight here that has odds is at least 15-1, and Figueroa Belmontes doesn't even have odds, which is usually a bigger indictment of the matchup. Is it safe to say, and do you agree with me, out of the three fights, the one that might be the most fun, surprising, and explosive is Matisse Molina?
Yeah, I would say that's the fight that you kind of go, well, there's some X factors here. You know, will Molina be able to get his offense going? Johnny is like, he's just quietly turned 31, you know, is a guy that just, he hasn't got a very big resume, 30 fights. The Mickey Bay one's probably his crowning glory. The Andre Klimov fight was good. I mean, he's durable. If he can handle your power, he's going to be right there. He's going to be dangerous to the end, even if he's, you know, it's a one-sided fight. He can come back and knock you out. But he hasn't had a lot of rounds. I mean, he, you know, fought last November, and he hasn't fought since. That's been John's problem. He's got these big wins, and he doesn't capitalize on them. Matisse, he got completely dismantled. He would have had to have been dropped and knocked out for that. But he had a rough outing. And losing it clearly to Danny Garcia, hasn't fought since. You know, he hasn't fought since September of last year. So the rust factor, I think there, that alone makes it very, very interesting. But then you think about the styles. And this could be a very explosive fight or a very short one.
I am very curious to see where Lucas Matisse is mentally. Because as you mentioned what happened last September, and his delay kept getting knocked back for various reasons. It got to a point where you're like, what's going on here? And earlier today I was able to talk to Johnny Molina, and he's very relaxed, and he says, Steve, I'll tell you one thing. There's a perception that I'm the guy moving up in weight, that I'm smaller. He says, there's no way. And the one thing about Johnny Molina, you look at the size of his back and how tall he is, I happen to agree with him. He is the bigger guy, and he could kick like a mule, but he has a lot of deficiency. So if I'm Molina, I don't dare let what happened with Antonio DeMarco a couple years ago happen again. I'm coming out bombs away. I mean, I'm not even setting a game plan except I'm going to move my hands and let's see if I get lucky and if I could build upon that. Gabe, Julio Diaz, you know what? He gave Sean Porter two pretty good runs, may have even won the first fight. So in retrospect, are we undervaluing Julio Diaz or is Keith Thurman still at a separate level?
You know, Diaz moved up in weight, and that always does something good for a fighter. You know, when you're not really killing yourself, especially as you get older, I think it gets harder and harder to make that weight sacrifice. I think Diaz fighting probably near his normal weight and basically just getting in optimal shape is very good for him. So, you know, I can't keep just saying, well, he's done, you know, with Diaz. He's still around. He's still dangerous. He showed danger with Amir Khan, and he didn't win that fight, but he was in it, and it took some shine off of Amir Khan out of that fight. So, you know, I think it's a worthy kind of fight for Keith Thurman. It's a bit of a mismatch, I think, just because we know Julio Diaz has no chance to really win this fight. He hasn't shown the ability to, like, land that big one at this weight and then come from behind and win. So, you know, he can be dangerous. He's somebody that you should be cautious of, if I'm Thurman. And if you get tired with him, he can be a problem. But it's going to go. I would go with the chalk, as you like to say, in this one.
Yeah, and Omar Figueroa, I think this is a natural lightweight. And Belmontes is really a guy moving up in weight. And he wasn't even a great puncher at the lower weight classes. I don't see him pulling off the upset here. Let's get back to the phone lines, 347-215-7598. We got news and notes later here on the next round, going 90 minutes as usual. Gabe, who's next on deck?
787, you're live on the next round.
Guys, this is Javier. How are you doing?
Good. What's going on,
what is
Javier?
You guys were talking about the fight game earlier. I know you say that HBO feel confident that the Golovkin-Chavez will happen, but do you guys find it odd that they spend 5 minutes talking about a fight that is not made yet? just thinking. And two more things. First of all, Steve, you were right. They announced that the co-feature with Jorge Melendez will be versus Yuri Foreman. And I wonder... Don't you have to put Verdejo now on that purview so people get excited about it? Because if you are going to put Yuri Foreman against Jorge Melendez as the co-feature, that, yeah, at least if you got Verdejo, people get excited in the room. Because
yeah, Javier, let me just say this. This undercard and the way it's shaping up, and there's a fight that's out there that I've been sworn to secrecy. I think it's actually pretty good. But what's out there, you're right. I'm with you, Javier. This undercard is so poor that even Bob Arum is saying, geez, you guys really don't give a damn about this undercard. The problem is that Cotto is controlling everything, and there's a very limited budget for this card. I was told today that Verdejo is going to fight in the last hour or so before they go on the air at 9 p.m., and they're going to show clips. You can also make the argument, should preliminary fights where you know it's a 95-5 proposition be on pay-per-view? Remember, Verdejo was on the card in Macau along with Zhao Xueming, and people ripped it. So either way, you're not going to be able to please everybody, Javier.
Do you know then, because I know Vasquez and Sona is in the card, have you heard anything of
there is one fight between two guys that have been on HBO in the past that they're working on, but we have to understand the way this card is being constructed. Top Rank doesn't get a fight, and it's basically being split up by DiBella, Cotto, and Samson Lekowitz. And when that happens, there's an old saying, too many chefs can spoil a stew. I think that's one of those issues, because the way this deal was constructed, where Cotto is the guy here that is running the show, and it ultimately falls on him. And let's face it, Cotto doesn't exactly have the roster of Golden Boy or Top Rank. I don't know what he could put up himself or Samson that is going to appease the masses.
One last thing, guys. Regarding May 31st, I keep hearing that they are going to show today they announced that Latino, they will have Fortuna and Del Valle,
yeah,
and HBO Latino. And I keep hearing that, that Kella and Donaire will be shown on HBO, but especially considering that we have to see like Fight Fire from Macau with Su Chi Minh, should we show in the Gradovich Walter, the Walter Darchinen fight and the Gradovich mandatory fight, which I believe is the best card they have done from Macau? And
well,
it's the one that they're not showing.
Javier, I don't disagree, and I was pressing people for an explanation. What I was told is, because of the cost of Foch Groves, they're only going with one fight from Macau. Now, I think what's going to happen, and I'll try to confirm this, I think Top Rank is going to stream this. But, listen, I love boxing, but do I love boxing to a point I want to watch a stream at 3 o'clock in the damn morning?
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, that's but I wonder, they have shown so many fights from Macau. Why can't the HBO too? I know that the Wembley Stadium fight is costing a lot of money, but I wonder why can't you show that fight on HBO too around 2 p.m. and then do the
well. Remember
Groves
this
fight.
Though, Javier, the Frost Groves fight, because it's taking place in the UK, is also an afternoon broadcast, so that might be the logistical hurdle that is keeping that from happening.
Okay, guys. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Javier, the most distinctive voice in all of radio. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
On 860, you're live on the next round. 860.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Is this CT?
Yeah, CT.
No, you've arrived. When I recognize your voice, CT, you've gone places.
Yeah. We'll talk about Sean Porter this past weekend. I was very, very impressed. I would have never thought he would have called Malignaggi that early. I kind of think he's like, you know, the dark horse in the welterweight division, and I think he's making some noise now. I think if he gets the Cal Brook fight, I think he takes Cal Brook out of there. I think Cal Brook's a good fighter, but I think Porter is just that much hungry.
Gabe, wouldn't you right now, based on current form and going back to Cal Brook's back and forth life and death struggle with Carson Jones, wouldn't you make Porter the solid favorite over Special K?
I would, but that's a good fight, man. And I like the back and forth nature of those fights for Cal Brook. You know, when you come out of those, you're going to have some lessons, you know, some experience, and that you really need, you know, so that you can take on a guy like Sean Porter. I kind of like the physical dimensions of Brook in that fight and his skill set, his ability to move and hit on the move. I'd lean towards Sean in it to kind of just bully him the way he did, Devil Alexander and the way he did Malignaggi. But it's a really good fight and a winnable fight for both guys. I'd love to see it. But do you give Sean a showcase? Do you consider Paulie that? Do you put him right away? I guess he's got the mandatory. He's going to have to deal with it. Or will they find a way to step around that Cal Brook fight?
The IBF has made it very clear. And again, I'll say it. They follow their rules. If you want to keep that belt, you're going to fight Special K. It's really that simple.
The thing I'm worried about Cal Brook coming up with excuses again. You know, it seems like every time he has a big fight, he tries to pull out. But my other thing about Matisse, if he does get past Molina, which I expect him to do, but I think it's going to be a tough fight, I would love to see Matisse versus Mauricio Herrera. I would love to see that fight.
Gabe, have you heard the rumors about Mauricio Herrera signing with Al Haymon? I've heard the speculation. There's been no official announcement that I know of, but if he signed with Al Haymon, well, Matisse's with Haymon. There's your formula.
Yeah, no, I have heard those rumors as well. I expect it to be announced. So, yeah, I mean, it's A side, B side, C side, just everybody, and you just mix and match and throw them all together because it doesn't really matter, you know? It's kind of watching it today, like watching these Fox One fights and watching all these guys develop and seeing the Terrell Mazion, the Black Magic, and Wolf's next fighter. And it really is starting to kind of look like a UFC where, you know, we're not developing this kid. You know, it's this kind of hyper-violent league, and you got to fight your way to the top. And if you can do that, good for you, like the way the Porters are. But nobody's really looking out for you, I don't think, anymore. As this whole thing takes shape, it really is kind of a kill-or-be-killed kind of environment. I don't know if that's good or bad for the sport. It makes me question.
CT, anything else we can help you with?
One other thing. I would like to know, what does Keith Thurman go from here if he does get past Julio Diaz this weekend?
In my opinion, he has paid his dues. And, you know, there's a downside to being Heyman, promoted or advised. You could get lost in the shuffle, and Keith Thurman is a guy that has steadily improved right in front of our eyes, and granted he's been paid well, but I know how passionate this guy is. You'd have to think human nature takes over, and he tells Al, match me up with one of your other big guns.
Well, here's the thing. You know, the IBF follows its rules, but the WBA, you know, they just make another belt. Marcos Maidana, he's got a belt that he's, you know, I believe Floyd doesn't want to pay the sanctioning fees on, so I don't know if they're even bothering to fight for it. But he's a human guy. So I imagine something's going to happen where, you know, after Maidana loses, the belt will be vacant, Thurman can go fight for it, and that's probably where he goes next.
CT, thank you for the time.
He's ranked tight there.
Call again soon, okay, CT?
Okay.
Let's go to some news and notes. Gabe, Gary Russell versus Vasily Lomachenko, the purse bid was won by Golden Boy by a mere $2,500 over Top Rank. Gabe, I'll say it right now, Vasily Lomachenko losing to Orlando Salido is the best thing that ever happened to his pocketbook, because if you look at the circumstances, because Salido didn't come in on weight, he gets a crack at the vacant title, then goes up for purse bid, and again, this is why the Cold War hurts fighters. You have a fight here that's a vacant featherweight title with two guys that aren't stars. Look how the price was driven up when both Top Rank and Golden Boy had an opportunity to bid on it.
Yeah, people talk about like the belt not mattering, or, you know, and the system being kind of out of whack, but, I mean, in some sense, this is a perfect example of it. I'm curious to see, though, you know, how does that – somebody wins it, then I guess the other guy just has to lend over their fighter's services and they get a set fee. What is left over for the side that doesn't win the first bid?
Well, what's going to happen is Gary Russell is going to split his $500,000 with his people, and usually the promoter gets 20 to 30% if it's a fair split, and then Lomachenko will do the same. But, I mean, think about it. If Lomachenko somehow would have beat Salido, I guarantee you his license fee would not have been $500,000 on his side. And what I'm being told is June 21st in Carson at the StubHub Center could be the destination for this fight. Gabe, Top Rank is at war again with Mikey Garcia. I'll make a bold prediction right now. Mikey Garcia, it will be another Nonito Donaire. I think he's going to learn something about the business of boxing and how airtight Paul Heyman's contracts are.
Yeah, I kind of, just looking at the language, you know, the way his lawyer had talked about, you know, negotiating, when you start mentioning that word in the press, it's like, you know, usually what you're looking for is we're getting out of this contract and we want to move on to the next phase. And, I mean, maybe, you know, as one of the lawyers said, that it was a lose-lose situation. If Top Rank wins, they keep a guy for another 2 years that just doesn't want to be there. But they seem to recover, in a sense, from Nonito Donaire, although I always got the feeling that he didn't get pushed as hard as he could have. They didn't develop him as well as they could have because he just tried to go away. And they were like, well, you know, we're going to invest what we can in his fights, but why invest a cent more to develop a guy's brand if he doesn't even want to be here? It seems strange, though. And I think it does need investigating what's going on with the contracts. And well, I guess the issue is that they kind of didn't let one expire and they just did another extension, thus making it one long contract. But I always thought that was just kind of renegotiating. You're looking to, okay, your brand is worth a little more, so we're going to offer you a little bit more for longer, though, while we do that. And you don't have to sign it if you don't want to. That's the thing I don't get, is why get into a contract that all of a sudden you just turn around and go, this is terrible, and it's all illegal? Did you switch lawyers? I don't understand the motives there. There's a lot of questions here.
I thought it was eye-opening that The lawyer says Top Rank's been acting as the manager for Mikey Garcia. Gabe, that must be news to Cameron Duncan. And by the way, he's made 8 HBO appearances since about 2011. I can't recall a single fight that was under 5-1 in terms of odds. Against J.C. Burgos, who was about, 11-1 underdog, he got paid $750,000. Poor Mikey Garcia. I'm sorry. I think not only is this baseless, I think they have a problem here in terms of jurisdiction. This lawyer kept talking about California law. That's all well and good, but there's one problem. Contracts in Nevada. And I think they're going to run into a roadblock. And Mikey Garcia, in his next fight, he was offered $1 million to fight Yoricus Gamboa in the fight that everyone wanted. At the beginning of the year, Gabe, this is puzzling. Everyone was talking about Mikey Garcia fighting Pacquiao in about 3-4 fights, whether you thought that was realistic or not. Gabe, now it looks like he might be Andre Ward of Top Rank.
Yeah, that's what I don't get. It's like, what are you fighting to get to? And I think that's probably the biggest question of all. You know, most people...
Or who are you trying to get to, Gabe? Let's rephrase that correctly.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. Who are you trying to get to? Who's been talking to you? They say, well, we've got all these other fights available to you, and we can give you more money. You can join our organization. Is that going on? That's a question that needs to be asked. And, you know, I don't want to turn into that angry guy on the website that I don't like that writes op-eds about me, where I'm always rattling on about the media. But when I look at us, and we don't ask all these questions and kind of fill in these blanks and hold people accountable when you're there and you have the access to do it, instead of just hoping to get your website's version of a Tim Bradley interview or whatever fighter you're talking to. It's these kind of checks and balances that it makes me wonder. And with Garcia, that's the real question to me, is who's been talking to them? What's really going on with that gym? And it's interesting because it's coming out of the same gym. Robert Garcia is his trainer. Brandon Rios, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if this ever went public, but Cameron was looking to hopefully start a promotional company with Rios, Brandon Rios. I don't know if that ever came to fruition because Cameron Duncan kind of fell off the scene, but it's interesting that Mikey would have such a problem. I mean, I couldn't imagine that their contracts are much different since they have the same manager. There's a lot of things going on here that make me wonder.
Listen, you could see this coming. When Mikey Garcia, Robert Garcia, Brandon, that whole crew came to the Canelo fight, which was promoted by Golden Boy Promotions, and I think Mikey's going to sit for a while. And as for Gamboa, someone tweeted at us, what is going on with Gamboa? The name being mentioned for the Cuban is Terrence Crawford. Your thoughts on that matchup, Gabe?
I like that fight. I mean, I think it could be... Well, I think it would be open enough for Crawford that he could probably get off his offense. And I think Gamboa at this point, I don't know, maybe he'd have to break his mold a certain bit, but I think he knows he's got to make some sort of entertaining showing. He's got to do something, or his career is just going to be for nothing. Because the legacy is just, what is he? What can you really say about him? I think it's an interesting fight. It has potential to be boring, but it also has potential to go completely the other way and be pretty exciting. But I like that fight.
So do I, because I think Terrence Crawford is going to be in a position where he's going to have to be the predator, and I'm looking forward to seeing if he gets those quick hands moving, and I've always said it's a very, very underrated body puncher. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines. If you want to call in, we got about another 22 minutes, 347-215-7598, and if you want to send in a tweet, question, or comment for K9 Kim or Golden Gate Montoya, at Steve Max Boxing, at Gabriel underscore Montoya, or at Max Boxing Live. Gabe, to the phone lines.
In the 646, you're live on the next round. 646, can you hear us?
Oh, there's our first knockdown. Okay. Give us the mandatory 8.
In the 602, you've been on for a while. You're live on the next round. 602.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Brandon in Phoenix.
Brandon from the Phoenix Sun City. Welcome aboard.
Hey, I got a question for you guys. My first question is that with the Golden Boy and Top Rank thing going on, I find it funny that none of the European fighters have really found a way to benefit from it over here in America, or at least HBO kind of crossing over to go over there to bring fighters back and forth. Can you comment on that a little bit for me?
Well, Brandon, I think one of the issues is that they have a promoter by the name of Eddie Hearn and other guys like Frank Warren, and, you know, that they have their own business. They don't necessarily have to come here. I mean, seriously, with the type of business model they have, if you're Joe Calzaghe, Ricky Hatton, Hamed, yes, you migrate, but I don't, unless they want to have a high-profile fight and act as, let's say, a B-side, Brandon, I don't see why they would really need to come to the United States.
Okay, that makes sense. And then my next question is about Sean Porter. As far as, now I know he's, you know, Kell Brook is mandatory, but if, you know, if Floyd, you know, beats Maidana, which everybody expects, wouldn't he want to maybe hold out and see if he could get into that September card with Floyd?
Gabe?
That's very possible. I mean, you know, at this point, I don't even think being a draw is something that you really need to be. It would help if you were that with Floyd. But he draws well enough on his own pay-per-view-wise that he's the A and B side in a certain sense. I think Sean is a good matchup for Floyd. He's shorter. He's lower to the ground. Yeah, he's tough and strong, but he's very wide with that right hand. He doesn't have the full arsenal. Like I thought he could have done more with Paulie even earlier, quicker. He doesn't come up the middle. He's got that real wide chest, and it's hard to really come across with a really solid uppercut up the middle. So I think all those things kind of benefit Floyd, you know, not to mention all his experience. So that wouldn't be surprising, particularly with the belt. But again, you know, Heyman's got that division on lock, and so it's not just about, you know, what's the best fight for Sean Porter. It's also about what's the best chess move for this whole group, and how do we keep that belt. So
Brandon, even though Sean Porter has got incredible momentum and there's a buzz about him, remember this. If he decides to keep that belt, he'll fight in July, so the timing doesn't work out. But putting that aside, let's say he says, okay, I'm going to do the Riddick Bowe. I'm going to throw this belt into the trash can because I could cash in on the Mayweather sweepstakes. I can understand that, okay?
That's what I'm thinking. And who else are they going to put in there?
Right, but let me pose this question to you. Doesn't it seem a little bit premature? Is Sean Porter really ready to face Floyd Mayweather?
Well, that's kind of the point, because that's how Floyd likes him. I mean, who else in the Golden Boy stable really has enough buzz, maybe other than a Keith Thurman, to, you know, pull off that fight in September with? You know what I mean?
Guys, tell me if I'm nuts here. I've always said one of the reasons why they made the Canelo fight when they did was because of the subpar numbers last year for Robert Guerrero. Now, my personal opinion is I think Maidana is a much better opponent than Guerrero, much more accomplished, got a lot of buzz about him. But let's say it does approximately the same numbers. I think that heightens the awareness of Showtime and Golden Boy and Mayweather that, we better get a live guy. And at that point, you better at least get a threat, if not a ticket seller. And that's where I think Keith Thurman might be the guy, because there is intrigue. He's a young African-American guy. He hasn't faced one of those in a while. He's athletic, and he's powerful. That fight, to me, just from a purist standpoint, as a fan, I'd be like, you know what? Let's see what he does with a young, hungry lion like one time.
True, but I'll just do my last comment, and then I'll get off. Is that to me that Porter at this point has faced a better competition than Thurman. So during the buildup of the fight, I think Porter would actually be a more legitimate opponent than Thurman would be.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all. Yeah, I mean, you know, Porter's the title holder, and he's faced better scouts. But styles make fights, and I think Thurman, well, both guys actually would be great on the TV show. They both give good quotes. Thurman's just naturally funny, though. That I mean, I don't know if that even factors in, but still, I still actually would consider Thurman to be more of the dangerous guy based on styles and attributes. I think he hits harder with both hands than Sean does.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. All right, man, you guys have a good one.
Thank you very much, Brandon. Please join us again. That opens up a phone line, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
In the 347, you're live on the next round.
What's up, guys? This is Mike from New York.
Mike from the Big Apple. Welcome to the next round.
I just got two questions, guys. Why do fighters have to sign a promotional contract?
Like, well, unless you're Ray Leonard, unless you're tied in and there's an investment that a promoter thinks that, or a security or a relationship, you can fight on club shows as free agents and buy your way on the shows. But in terms of being developed, they're not spending 25 fights on you unless you are with the promoter. I mean, that's a fact of life. Unless you're a fighter, you want to finance your own career, which most can't, that utopia simply does not exist.
Okay, but what about like a guy like Chavez Jr.? I just read a quote that he's not going to fight for top rank unless they extend him or something like that. But like,
well, unless they pay him well for that extension. But like I said, I mean, Chavez probably could, but then, all right, so now instead of worrying about training, which quite frankly he's had enough problems doing, right, now he has to work on his own public relations. He has to work on his own, you know, who's going to handle his credentials, make an arena deal, make a deal with a television network. I don't think people understand. Promoting is not as easy as people think.
Oh, that's not what I mean. I mean, but why can't he just, okay, they go to like a purse bid, like, okay, what is Golden Boy going to offer me for a fight? Okay, what's Top Rank going to offer me a fight? One-shot deal. You know what I mean? Like, okay, Golden Boy's offering me $5 million to fight this guy, but I could get $6 million over here. Why can't fighters do that? What's wrong with, like, Chavez Jr. has already established himself as a draw. I don't like the guy personally, but he's a draw. He does nice numbers. Like, wouldn't it be beneficial to the fighter in the money-wise? I don't know about fan-wise, but money-wise, wouldn't that be beneficial to the fighter?
Well, okay, let's say he wanted to do that, but if you're Golden Boy, Top Rank, or any other promoter, why would you want to put up your fighter then? See, it takes two to tango. And if you're Top Rank, you don't want to do business with Chavez after he leaves you, not so soon. I mean, to me, it's not as easy as people think. By the way, maybe I'm nuts. I think Top Rank's done pretty damn good by Chavez, last I checked.
Yeah, of course, of course. But
well,
I'm just saying.
And I think here's the other thing, is that it's like a roving venue. You know, the promoter is the one that ends up getting the venue. But it would be advantageous to the fighter. I see where you're going, in that the fighter needs more power. But not every fighter is a draw. And, you know, there's a lot of fights on a fight card. So it's not as simple as, you know, I'm Fighter X and I just want to represent myself and kind of hang out there in the ethos. What do you bring to the table? How many people
right.
are guaranteed to see you fight? Can you do, you know, what do you draw on TV? You know, it's not somebody like the entertainment business. I'm a really good actor. Everybody should use me. You know, why? You know, what do you bring to the table? And so I think that's the hard part. It's a strange business in that each person is their own individual business in a sense. I don't know. I wish there's got to be some way that the power does get equally divided so that it isn't just one league kind of deciding how things go. Like, you look at Paulie and how much he's tried to struggle in public and how much he's just, you know, broken in the wind and decided to go with what the big company wants him to do. It's a perfect example of where the fighter stands and how little rights they do have in the marketplace. It should change.
Guys, let me just point this out. There's a lot of dissatisfaction over what looks to be a very mediocre card June 7th. And remember this, the guy who had the power was Miguel Cotto. And Miguel Cotto has his own promotional company, at least in theory. A large part of that is because, you know, he's the draw and he decided to run the show. And this is what you're going to end up with, just what Gabe said. Okay, so what are you going to put underneath me? You're going to get Jorge Melendez. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it sounds good in theory, but I like to live in the real world.
Yeah. Isn't it, aside from Oscar, when all these fighters start their promotional companies, it's like the equivalent of rappers starting their own rap label? Like, yeah, you know, you got your own label, but who's on it? You know what I mean? It's really... Like, who's really on Code of Promotions, really? That's somebody. Who's on
right.
Media Promotions or Hatton Promotions?
Oscar was unique in that he was also kind of a mainstream figure. You know, he brought women in. He kind of crossed certain lines. And so his name had a certain cachet. I think HBO was looking to the future when they gave his company an exclusive deal right out the gate. And he was kind of developed to be the next generation, you know, the next big promoter. I think that's why they succeeded. It wasn't because he was more famous than Sugar Ray Leonard. I think he had a better support in a network. That's pretty rare anymore. But, you know, the Cotto is generally more the story.
Okay, and I don't want to keep you guys going, but the last question. Steve, the Abner Mars rumor of him going to Virgil Hunter, that's totally false hope, right?
Well, what's that old saying about where there's smoke, there is fire?
Oh, God.
And Ivan Marez, I don't know what's going on with this guy. Let me just say one thing. Johnny Gonzalez did something to him. That left hook, it didn't just beat him on that night in August. Fellas, I think it beat him and it resonated because this guy doesn't know whether he's coming or going. First he wants the rematch, then he doesn't, then he might move up, then he doesn't. Then he says he wants to face Leo Santa Cruz, which was never going to happen. Then he says he wants a tune-up, but he doesn't understand that tune-up money is not Showtime money. I sincerely believe this. Abner Mares is a guy lacking in confidence, and he is a very, very confused young man as we speak.
Okay, I thought it was he was going to sign with Al or not sign with Al. I heard rumors about that.
more on that later.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for everything.
Gabe, let's go through some news and notes. Right now in 2014, the best three fights that I've seen, and I haven't seen every single one of them, but I've seen a pretty good amount of them, has been Tommy Coyle against Brizella, which happened in the UK. And then there was the war between Gavin Reese and Buckland, which was a very, very pitched battle. And this past weekend, Anthony Carolla with a TKO in 10 over John Murray. What a fight, Gabe. I don't know if you had a chance to see this, but if you haven't, I suggest you do.
No, full disclosure, I haven't seen that one. Usually Mondays are a gigantic marathon, and I'm actually one fight away from that fight. I can't wait to see it. It sounds like, I mean, most of the fights I find out before I even see them anymore. I can't wait. I'm done. I think May 24th is my last night on this play, and I'll actually start to join the world of watching fights live. But, no, I can't wait for that one. I've heard
also on that
call,
Scott Quigg scored a second-round knockout. Gabe, are you excited at all about Vladimir Klitschko against Alex Liepe? Does Liepe have any shot whatsoever?
I'm not excited at all. I mean, it's – and maybe that's what's going to happen to us. We're all going to get lulled to sleep, and then Vladimir, you know, something terrible is going to happen, or you know, he's going to get knocked out by one shot. We're all going to miss it. But no, I think it's just we're kind of just waiting for the, you know, maybe this is we're American centric, you know, but we're just waiting around until it's our turn and the Klitschko thing is over. I've been a proponent of them for years. They're very good fighters, but until this current group that is over here kind of engages with him again, you know, in some level. Because Areola needs to get into that mix, you know, with Severn, that whole the winner of that should get in the mix. Wilder's not quite ready. Everybody's kind of moving towards them, but until they do, all these other guys that he's facing, yeah, it does nothing for me. It seems like it doesn't do anything for anybody. But I wonder. I mean, he talks about fighting 10 more years. Are we going to see that? Is he going to defend this next against this next generation? That would get me kind of excited, I think.
You know what? Gabe, you're right. If he's going to face some of these young guys like Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury or Anthony Joshua, I mean, that's a long ways off, then you know what?
Yeah.
Help me in. But Alex Liepe, I want to see what the odds are. It has to be at least a 30-1 fight. Gabe, Thursday on ESPN2 special edition of Friday Night Fights, Jose Cito Lopez takes on Aaron Martinez. Gabe, I'm not going to lie to you, and I posed this question to both his trainer, Henry Ramirez, and the fighter himself. He looked, I don't want to use the word shot against Mike Arnautis, but for much of that night, he certainly looked faded.
Yeah, the faded is a good word. I mean, it's just you just wonder, was it years of making weight? I always wondered if he shouldn't have moved up higher sooner and what that does to a guy because he's, you know, he's a young man. He's taken some shots in the ring and everything, but it's when he's taken those shots and what condition he was that he took them that maybe it did the damage. And what I'm talking about is making that weight all those years and not quite recovering fully, being dehydrated, being a gangly guy, but having to sweat down. That's had to have taken its toll. And that's what it looks like, kind of a bit of a spent bullet, you know. I wonder about him, and if his end is sooner than we think. And can he reclaim the body? You know, a lot of what I'm watching go down up here at San Carlos, the Undisputed, it might seem like the only gym I cover with it feels like, but the cutting-edge work that they're doing to try to get the fighter to recuperate from just sparring and training all day, and, like, particularly oxygen to the brain with the hyperbaric work – I think it's something that everybody needs to start looking into, you know, because it, you look at Estipe, he's one of those cases. Young dude, he's only 29, but he looks, he's looking more and more like an old fighter. That's wrong.
Gabe, we have one more call. Let's wrap it up with this guy. Let's go to him.
In the 707, you're live on the next round.
Yo, it's Carl.
Carl, what's going
what's up,
on?
Carl?
Hey, what's up, fellas, man? I heard you mention something about that that Russell and Lomachenko fight, man. Who do you think wins that fight?
Gabe, I got to be honest with you. Do I go with the battle-tested guy, Lomachenko, a guy that I think has a lot of ability that's untested?
Battle-tested at two fights, but he's been in with somebody. Yeah, I don't know. And Gary is such a question mark. It's like you look at him, he looks like the guy, he's got all the tools. Really a tremendous fighter, an offensive machine. But
yeah.
What's going to happen when the guy in front of him adjusts, hits back, appears to be as world-class? Lomachenko grew up a lot in that fight. And I loved the way it gave me hope for his future and that they'd lost on this roll of the dice, but that he'd adjusted at the end and started to really get things done.
Yeah.
I would probably lean towards Lomachenko. I like the style, and I like that he's been someplace and has been willing to be great. Whereas Gary has just kind of been waiting for his shot to pick up a belt somewhere. Lomachenko wants to be great, so I'll go with that guy.
Okay, okay. Let me ask you this. Like how Golden Boy, how they won the purse bid, let's say Lomachenko does win. Do they have any options on Lomachenko after the fight?
No. In a purse bid situation, the general rule of thumb is the winner gets to walk away scot-free. That would be a violation, I believe, of the Ali Act. When it comes to mandatories and fights of this nature, if Lomachenko wins, he goes back to top rank.
Man, I heard that. One more quick thing, man. Have they mentioned any of the numbers from the Bradley Pacquiao fight?
The word that I'm getting, and nothing's been announced, is anywhere between 600 to 650.
That's ugly.
And it's not a strikeout, but it certainly is not a home run. And
right.
I just think as good as Bradley is, and I'm a big fan of his, he just doesn't move the needle. That's just a simple fact of life.
Those numbers are worse than the first fight.
No, the first fight did about 900. Now remember, in 2012, Manny Pacquiao had not been knocked face first up until
right.
that fight. If something changed, and I don't want to say it's a steep decline, but the numbers do speak for themselves, Carl.
Okay, okay, okay. Well, man, I'll catch you guys next week, man.
All right, say hi to E40 for me. Thank you, Carl.
I will do that later.
Here's a last tweet from Andy Finlayson. He says, odds on Klitschko is 33-1 from the bookies in Britain. So yeah, that pretty much speaks for itself. All right, well, so on behalf of Gable Montoya, this is Steve Kim. On the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.